Welcome in to First Things First. I'm Sarah Kustak, filling in for Jenna Wolf. That's a Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That's Nick Wright.
Guys, Sarah, thank you for coming in this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to see you, Jenna.
Sending our best to Jenna.
Yeah, yeah. Nick planned a little virus with Jenna. Jenna's going to be all right.
Jenna was fighting through it all week.
She's doing two-a-days today at the gym.
Yeah, yesterday, if you watched.
We had to get some NBA in. We knew the NBA season. We're so excited about the season. So,
are you ready for it?
You're in the bullpen.
Coming out.
Brought you in.
Absolutely. We'll still stick with the NFL, though, today. We've got a jam-packed show. Zeke says he's ready for a dogfight against the Eagles. Jerry Jones might be handling Dak's contract all wrong, but we start with some Thursday night football on Fox. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs traveling to Mile High Stadium to take on the Broncos in a big AFC West showdown. Mahomes was the early season frontrunner to take home back-to-back MVP honors, but with the Chiefs on a two-game losing streak and the Kansas City offense looking slow. As of late, Mahomes knows it won't get any easier against the Broncos defense.
They have first of all, they have great personnel with the defensive players that they have that have came back and that have been there for a long time. And then with Coach Fangio, I mean, he's such a really good defensive coordinator. I mean, defensive coordinator and then now a head coach. And so for them to have that combination, you know they're going to have a good defense. And so for as an offense, we're going to make sure that we understand what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it and then find ways to have success whenever we get our opportunities.
See, all right, so we hear Patrick Mahomes talk about it, but how can the Chiefs get their offense back on track against this tough defense?
Well, it's going to be difficult because they got some mismatches on the front that is going to cause them protection. They're not going to go into this game. Typically, you can have 5 to 9 different type of pass protections. But when you're going against someone like Von Miller, and especially when you're on the road because of crowd noise, you like to cut those down and be more concise so guys can be aggressive. Kansas City's offensive line, we've seen leaks in that offensive line the last couple weeks. Nick has told us about Patty Mahomes' ankle injured in the first game of the season. His numbers, once he gets dinged in the game, they're phenomenal. He comes into the game off to a fast start, but once he gets hit or if he re-aggravates that ankle, the numbers after that in the offense begins to suffer. I do believe because the secondary of the Denver Broncos, you can get some yards against them if he can get time to throw. I do believe it's up to Andy Reid, though. Protect that offensive line. Come up with Andy some type of running game to be able to protect your quarterback. And also, we're not talking about that defense, but you can't have a Kansas City discussion without talking about ribs and that defense, because that is what's going to prevent them from being a Super Bowl champion, getting to the Super Bowl, them not being able to stop people. So Andy Reid, help out that offensive line. Help out Patty Mahomes. I do believe if Patty has enough time, they don't have enough skilled defensive backs to be able to cover the wide receivers, even though they'll be without Sammy Watkins. They have a hard time covering Kelsey, and we know Tyreek Hill is a mismatch for anyone in the NFL.
Nate. So to your point, Chris, when you mentioned that in the games where Patrick Mahomes has aggravated that ankle injury weeks 1, 5, and 6, I mentioned this yesterday, not as an excuse, but so people understand what Mahomes, who has had unbelievable and unprecedented production the last year and a half, what has happened to him. In those 3 games, from the moment he hurts his ankle to the end of the game, he's 6 yards per attempt and an 80 quarterback rating. That's almost 6 quarters of football where he is a bottom third NFL quarterback, and it's all after he aggravated the ankle injury in week 1 and then after he got stepped on in weeks 5 and 6. And so what do the Chiefs need to do on a short week where the ankle is probably going to be the least healed it has been? They've got to protect him a multitude of ways. Way one, get the ball out of his hands quick. Listen, there's nobody that enjoys watching the Chiefs do the deep strike, drop back pass offense. But what happened in the game against the Texans? With a minute left in the half, they try to go for a deep strike inside their own 25-yard line, and it's a strip sack because they can't protect him. Do some of the things you saw last year. Get the ball to Tyreek Hill out in space horizontally, quickly, and then your lack of a pass or pass protection doesn't hurt you. Second one, a way to neutralize pass rush is screen passes. There's no team in the league that's better at screen passes than the Chiefs with Andy Reid designing the plays.
Absolutely.
Use the pass rush against Denver. And the third one is, I'm going to sound like Coach Mangini, run the damn ball.
There we go.
Occasionally.
Listen,
I loved it before the year when Travis Kelce said, when you think we're going to pass, we're going to pass. And when you think we're going to run, we're going to pass anyway. I loved it. And under normal circumstances where you have your left tackle and your left guard and your quarterback is healthy and your defense maybe is playing a little bit better and can afford a quick possession offensively to where they're right back on the field, that's fine. But one of the reasons the Chiefs have been annihilated, Sarah, time of possession the last two games, yes, it's because their defense can't get off the field, but it's also because the offense can't stay on the field because they are they've run the ball 19 times combined in the last two football games, even though they've been very close games. So those three things are things the Chiefs should do tonight to get out of Denver with a win and then address the bigger issues moving forward.
Well, where's the balance between play calling and just opponents' defenses figuring out what Kansas City is trying to do? I mean, how much of it may be predictability and how much is it actually what they need to change with the play
calling? When you get in a situation, that's a good question. When you get in a situation where you're trying to protect the quarterback, you're trying to protect the offensive line, you have to run some stuff that's fairly predictable. On first down, you can't be as much play action and throwing the ball deep down the field knowing you have two more downs. You need to do some basic things. And just, you don't need 5, 6, 8 yards on the first carry. But the balance keeps Von Miller from teeing off, because even at 2nd and 8, it's a lot better than 2nd and 10. Or if you get tackled for a loss, you get sacked on first down. Yeah. So it becomes a critical part, not only what the lack of premier offensive linemen that we don't have, but also the quarterback and his overall health. Andy Reid knows that once Patty Mahomes gets injured, that his stats have suffered. So that's part of his job, to be able to take some of that pressure off him, and that's what he can do with the running game and running some things that might seem very, very basic when you look at Kansas City, because they do more exotic things than any offense in the NFL.
I came in here Monday and I said for the first time since Patrick Mahomes was the quarterback, I was concerned. I thought you had seen in back-to-back weeks some potentially systemic issues and some real injury concerns.
You get a lot more concerned about Patty Mahomes before LeBron. LeBron is like,
LeBron's been doing it for 15 years. And LeBron, Patrick Mahomes has suffered an injury in year 3 that LeBron didn't suffer until year 16. So LeBron, as much as I love Patty Mahomes, I can't assign
that. So Patty Mahomes
level
ain't even in there.
No, not yet. Okay. Not yet. But the point I'm making is, Monday, I was concerned. If they cannot beat a Joe Flacco-led Denver Bronco team, then I will come in tomorrow and be panicked. Then it's no longer about how they match up against New England. It is about, will they even get to play New England more than once, meaning more than the regular season matchup. I don't think the Chiefs can solve everything tonight, but it can be a red alert, panicked situation in Kansas City if they leave Denver with a loss.
Cowboys playing host to the division rival Eagles. Dallas looking to get back on track after losing their last three games. Ezekiel Elliott is off to the slowest start of his career, and it won't get much easier against an Eagles defense that allows a second fewish rushing yards per game. Here's what Zeke had to say about what he expects Sunday night.
Always a big game, division rival. We know them very well. They know us very well. It's always a tough fight. We know they're going to come out there and give it all they got. They're in the same situation as us. So, it's going to be a dogfight.
Dogfight. All right, see, how should the Cowboys offense attack this Eagles defense?
Now, this is difficult, because when you don't have your starting left tackle, you don't have your right starting tackle, it's so easy and simple to say, they got to be able to run the ball. But Jason Garrett, Kellen Moore, the new offensive coordinator, they're going to have to be very, very creative, because we know NFL game typically 65 to 75 plays you're going to have. So they're going to have 35 runs or something in there. So for me, I'm going to have to try to get my wide receivers involved, Nick. If Amari Cooper is healthy, Tavon Austin, he's going to be involved in the running game, because I can't just knock Philadelphia off the ball. Even if I had my starting offensive line, Philadelphia doesn't have that type of defense line. You're going to be able to do that. So we got to be able to trick them a little bit. And this is a game. I know Dak ain't signed his contract. Dak might have to carry the ball 8 to 10 times. That's the way I would tackle him. I would bring back the read option, which also gives them the ability to be able to pass, get those linebackers sucked up. But I'm going to be creative in my running game, knowing that I got a second teamer at left tackle, I got a second teamer at right tackle. I'm going to tell my quarterback, don't put on your throwing pads, put on your big boy pads, because we're going to be running a lot of read option. You and Zeke, and sometimes you coming up, hitting the guy with a quick strike in the middle of that defense. That's the way I would go about it if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, given the injuries.
I'm glad, sorry to interrupt, I'm glad you mentioned the injuries. The Cowboys are approaching a critical mass on the injuries as far as key players, because the injuries are in clusters. Say, of guys that didn't practice yesterday, two tackles, two wide receivers, Cooper and Cobb, two of your top three corners. So it's not just that six Dallas Cowboys didn't practice, it's that those six guys play three positions, two wide receivers, two tackles, two corners, which puts them behind the eight ball. And I understand Eagle fans are going to say, don't talk to us about injuries, and I understand that, but the Eagles, the one benefit they have at this point, the injuries are at least diversified. They're missing a wide receiver, they're missing a corner, they're missing a defensive tackle, as opposed to those injuries clustering the way they are for Dallas.
Yeah, and especially from a wide receiver standpoint, you're talking about attacking that defense and you're talking about the run game, but the most critical play of Dallas's season was their two-point conversion against the Jets, and this is who they didn't have available. Amari Cooper's on the sideline, all right? Randall Cobb's on the sideline. They went to an empty backfield, put Ezekiel Elliott in the slot, and Jason Witten, fresh out the TV booth with a whole head full of hair now, and moved him into the other slot. Greg Williams, the defense coordinator for the Jets, goes all out blitz. And you have the best tailback in the NFL running an option route, which he never does. And you have Jason Witten trying to get open against the safety, was to no avail. So those injuries, Nick, that you're talking about in clusters, we saw a version of that in the end of that game in the Jets. And they there's no defense. The Dolphins would love to play that type of offense right now.
So the Cowboys are up against it. Now, what they have going for them is, despite the injuries, one guy who's not injured is 21, is Zeke. And we've talked about this before, but it warrants mentioning. Zeke Elliott has played the Philadelphia Eagles four times in his career. He has left the field a winner all four times. He has averaged in those four games 167 scrimmage yards.
Say that again.
167 scrimmage yards. About 115 rushing, about 50, a little more than 50 receiving. He has been a dominant player in this matchup, and this has been a matchup between, over the last 3 years, the two teams that have won this division. It's gone Dallas, Philly, Dallas. So even with your banged up offensive line, I do think the game plan will be to feed Zeke, because in addition to the banged up offensive line, you do have the banged up receiving corps, so the passing game is not going to be as available to him. I think your point about having some of your running game be Dak Prescott, Dak being more involved in that, like we saw at points in last season, is a really good one. I thought that maybe he would have been more involved on that two-point conversion play you're mentioning, and maybe they would have if they hadn't been stuffed on a fourth and goal, on a fourth and one early in the game, trying to get Dak involved out on an option. But this has to be all hands on deck for Dallas, because you lose four in a row, including a New Orleans game where they don't have Breeze, a Jets game where they're the Jets, and then a game against the Philadelphia Eagles with the first place in the division on the line. The reality is, if that's who your team is, your team's not a good football team.
You bring up impressive numbers about Zeke and what he's done against the Eagles. See, is there something you identify about this matchup? Is there any consistency in what the Eagles have not been able to do against Ezekiel Elliott that can allow him to have those type of games?
That's a very good question. The one thing Dallas has been very, very good at is double teaming the down linemen, which in Philadelphia, especially inside, you have to do. Philadelphia's linebackers the last several years have been inconsistent. They still are. So that's what they've been able to do. Travis Frederick, all-pro center, if he's able to get up to that second level and get on top of those linebackers, because you got to get Zeke. And the big difference between this year and the previous years was you don't see Zeke getting into the secondary. It's the offensive line's job to get the running back to the second level. It's the running back's job to make someone at the second level miss. It's the wide receiver's job to get the third level to DB. That's how you create big plays. So that's what you need to see. If we see Zeke in the secondary, I'm talking about deep down the field, Eaton, then you know the Dallas game plan and what they've done. The four previous times that Zeke's been in the lineup, they were successful at that, and that's getting him into that secondary or to that second level.
And you do like Zeke's chances if the offensive line can do that, because Philadelphia, Nigel Bradham, one of their linebackers, is hurt.
Yep.
Zach Brown, one of their former linebackers, just got cut. I think he was the player who said Kirk Cousins was the weak link in Washington, and then they were
teammates in Washington.
Teammates in Washington, pardon me. and then they promptly cut him after Kirk Cousins cut them up. So the Eagles linebacking core, not as strong as it once was, if you can get past that defensive line. I know Fletcher Cox didn't practice yesterday, but they expect him to play.
Yeah, he's been banged up all year.
And yesterday I think it was an illness, but they getting past that front, that defensive front, the Eagles, that's their first and sometimes their last line of defense. They got Malcolm Jenkins way back there between the D-line and Jenkins. You got a bunch of guys who have not been great. That's where Dallas has to be excellent. And I know we're talking about it from the Cowboys offense versus Eagles defense. This Cowboys defense has to get to Carson Wentz. DeMarcus Lawrence and Frank Clark are hanging out in the same club. The pass rushing DNs that got paid this summer that have done nothing thus far this year. But he needs to have a big football game in order for the Cowboys to win.
Let's get to some hoops. LeBron and the Lakers are just 5 days away from their first game of the year. The King dropped 11 assists in some preseason action last night against the Warriors. Could be a new look for LeBron headed into year 17. Nick, what is the Lakers' ceiling this season?
Oh, dominate and win a championship. I mean, that's the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the best duo in the league. They have the best big man in the league. I believe they still have the best player in the league, but he's not currently wearing the crown. He would have to go snatch that back from Kawhi or Giannis, depending on who you think currently has it. Kevin Durant maybe says, what about me? Well, Kevin Durant maybe can snatch it back himself a year from now. But this Lakers team is going to present enormous problems for so many teams because they are so enormous. This is the point you made this morning, C.
Woo.
And I think it's a really good one that you should expand on, which is the amount of just 6'8" and above guys they can throw at you while also having very competent outside shooting is that a recipe that a LeBron team, to my recollection, has not had.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron teams have had shooting. They've been great defensively, but they have never been huge. I mean, if you remember the story of when he came back to Cleveland and they traded for Mozgov, David Griffin tells the story, how excited LeBron was seeing Mozgov in the hotel lobby.
Right.
Because he's like, oh my, he's such a big guy.
What do you like, LeBron?
Right, he's 7'2" is what
big.
I like. He's big. And so I am a little more bullish than most on what Dwight can bring to this team. I think everyone is adequately optimistic about what Anthony Davis is going to bring to this team. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see a fresher LeBron James, even in year 17, than we saw at the beginning of last season or even the year before, because this is the least basketball he's played in a year in his entire NBA career. So I think the Lakers, their ceiling is to be the best team in basketball.
I just think in theory, I'm not discrediting your point. In theory, we think because LeBron played less basketball that he's going to be fresher. But I just think the challenges of you're not the greatest player. Anthony Davis is now in town, and now we're not doing triplets. We're only doing duets.
Yep.
So I think all those things right there, because even if LeBron had made it to the playoffs last year and they lose in the first round, I still think we still see the same guy. Now, we know his body should be fresher. You know that all great athletes, Kustak, are looking for some type of challenge. He's been issued that. With Kawhi winning last year, the Kawhi turning down the Lakers, going to the Clippers in the same building there. So this should be an exciting year. I do think their overall height. Height has not been something in the NBA that we have talked about the last decade. But I do believe in this season because the way the talent is dispersed around the league and they have the adequate shooters with LeBron at the point, who guards him? Like if people say, well, who's better, them or the Clippers? Well, who's Kawhi going to guard? Who's Paul George going to guard? Because there is no answer for Anthony. We can debate all these things. Is there an answer for Kawhi? Yes. Is there an answer for Paul George? Is there an answer for LeBron? Yes. But there is no answer for Anthony Davis in the NBA. And to me, he should be in the conversation of the greatest players, him and LeBron. And having both of them there and the style for which they're going to play, I think it's going to be very exciting.
What's your level of concern about, not even concern, but their defense and what they're going to do defensively? Because you talk about who's going to guard LeBron, how do other teams mm-hmm. match up against them, especially with their size and also with LeBron James, a player of his caliber in the versatility he brings to the table. But that's a factor. The defense is a factor. How concerned are you you heading into the season, the early part, understanding the favorable schedule?
And that's the marriage between that coaching staff, Frank Vogel and Jason Kidd, yeah, coming up with the system. Because right now, there is no intermediate basketball game as far as jump shots. So when you have the lineup that they have, all we got to do is overguard the three-point line. We're going to overguard the three-point line. We're going to give them the intermediate jump shots, because who's going to be challenging us at the rim night after night? So with their size and with Dwight and the way he's playing and the way that he's looking at life with it, no type of guarantees on this type of contract. He's had a sensational training camp. Him and Anthony Davis and JaVale McGee being at the rim in a rotation, like, to me, I don't see another team that presents that. So how good do I have to be when I only have to get them off the three-point line? I'm trying to funnel them into the painted area. There's not a lot of teams that have that luxury.
The biggest concern for the Lakers defensively is going to be guarding point guards, and that can be tough in the Western Conference where you just have a plethora of great point guards. If they are going to start LeBron essentially at the point, especially with Kuzma out, then you have to. Then whenever LeBron's playing point, Avery Bradley has to be on the court, and Avery Bradley has to guard the other team's point guard, and that is asking Avery Bradley to do something he has not been able to do the last few years, which is stay healthy and be the player he once was in Boston. Because we've talked about what their crunch time lineup's going to be of LeBron, Avery Bradley, Danny Green, Kuz when he gets back, and Anthony Davis. And that lineup should be sensational offensively. But there's only one guy. You can say, I'll have Danny Green do it. Well, Danny Green's your best perimeter defender. Mm-hmm. Danny Green is your guy to guard wings. That's my concern for them defensively. And the one other concern, just quickly for me, is how often will Frank Vogel be able to convince Anthony Davis to play the five? Because we can talk about how important the size is, and mm-hmm, I agree with you, but they are better off with that lineup I just mentioned than one of those people being out and JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard being in alongside AD.
And Frank Vogel, I'm glad you got to a coaching point. Kustak, historically, he's been a guy that does not like to switch to pick and roll. And that's been one of his begaboos. Would he be able to coach in this new NBA? Does he compromise? And we're going to be able to see that very, very early. You can see them now. They're starting to switch everything, especially with LeBron being at the point you have to do that. So let's just watch as these players try to gel, and this staff, which there's going to be a lot of talk about the staff. Let's see this staff, if they create something to help this team play the type of defense that we know that they're going to be.
I do think, because for as much scrutiny is on this staff and the way in which they come together, they got a lot of good basketball minds on the staff. So if they are able,
it's a good start,
to acclimate themselves to each other. But that's
the question.
Mahomes and the Chiefs taking on the Broncos. Denver's head coach Vic Fangio first became an NFL coach back in 1986, 9 years before Mahomes was born. So when Fangio compared Mahomes to a Hall of Famer, I guess you could say it carried a lot of weight.
I think he's, you know, like John Elway was in the 80s and 90s. He's that guy. Like Aaron Rodgers has been for the last 12, 14 years, however many years he's been starting. He's kind of that guy. He's the great passer, the great improviser, plays with a lot of athletic arrogance, which is a compliment. You know, he's very confident in his ability. He's very poised, doesn't get rattled, and he's got an arm that, you know, is really, really good. And he can make all the throws they're asking him to make, and some that they're not even asking him to make, that just show up in his improvisations. So, you know, and he's good in the pocket, has great pocket feel. You can tell he's a gamer. You know, the guy is really, really special.
High compliments from Fangio, but going into detail explaining mm-hmm. why he believes that. See, do you
Absolutely.
Think that it's fair at this point to compare Patrick Mahomes to guys like Elway and Rodgers?
Well, first, I think it's important that our fans realize who John Elway was.
I'm so glad you said that.
Because people forget that he was a great baseball player. He was had the ability to be able to go into Major League Baseball, but he decided on a football career. And John Elway was an unbelievable athlete. Most people who do remember him at the end on a Terrell Davis, a defensive-oriented, a Shannon Sharpe team. But John Elway was an incredible athlete. Before his knees gave out on him, John Elway could scramble to his left or right, throw the ball as far as you want. There's a legendary play, him playing against Ohio State, rolling all the way to his left, throwing all the way back against the nationally ranked Ohio State team, you know, when he was with the Stanford Cardinals. So for me, when Vic, when he brings up John Elway, oh, I give respect to that. That's how you get to five Super Bowls. Man, John Elway was a bad dude. Can make any type of throw and was a type of leader. He was one of those original John Wayne type of quarterbacks. And you had to knock him out the game. John Elway, man, is really one of the greatest quarterbacks. And I believe he's underrated, especially when he lost those first three Super Bowls. But Patty Mahomes does have that. And I love to see coaches that, it's not hyperbole. They're not adding anything to it. He picked a name from the past that's exactly right. Either Brett Favre, either Elway, either Marino. Those are the kind of people we should be talking about when we talk about Patrick Mahomes, because that's type of a special ability that he has. He has that athletic arrogance. I love to hear the coach talk about that.
He said it was a compliment. Wanted yes. to make sure everyone knew that it was. He was saying that in a nice way, not a condescending
and
way.
And all those other guys, they had it, and they had it in spades. Marino, most confident dude that I ever saw. Elway, a walking arrogant. Pigeon-toed, mm-hmm. walking around. John Elway was a bad dude, and we know about Brett Favre. So Patrick Mahomes, I love to hear these coaches when they dip into history and they bring that up and compare it to what we're seeing now, because that, I mean, you could look at them and be like, wow, I can't believe, yeah, there was a Patty Mahomes before him, and it was one of those guys.
If I can just quickly expand on the Elway point. You guys know I grew up in Kansas City. I grew up with John Elway just ruining my life year after year after year with the fourth quarter comebacks, with you thought Derek Thomas had knocked him out of the game, and he had not. And there is almost no all-time great quarterback who the numbers do more injustice to than John Elway. Because you like, oh, his career quarterback rating, sub 80. Nah, man. Before Tom Brady reset all the record books, no quarterbacks ever started more Super Bowls than Elway. He went to five of them. Yep. Before Tom Brady, to me, when I was college age, the discussion of who the greatest modern era, take Unitas and Sammy Ball out of it, quarterbacks are, it was about Montana, Marino, and John Elway.
Yep.
And so when I watch Patrick Mahomes, you do see some of those same things. I don't think he has the physical toughness that Elway did, and I don't think he's as bulky as Elway was. But again, I'm going to go back to an observation you made a few weeks ago that keeps coming up, and that's the baseball thing.
Yes.
That is the, and I know Favre and Rodgers weren't baseball players. Those are just guys with two of the greatest arms ever.
No, but Marino and Elway were.
Marino and Elway were, and Russell Wilson was. And his ability to, at a moment's notice, and I look silly when I do it, but drop his arm down. Mm-hmm. Because what you will see tonight, if you watch the game closely on Fox, I guarantee it, is Von Miller flash or a different guy flash with a hand up. And Patrick Mahomes the window is right through his arm.
Yep.
And he will drop it to the side and do that. And that almost preternatural ability to see that and have the arm talent to do it, that is what, to me, separates him, people, from a Deshaun Watson. And I love Deshaun Watson. And Deshaun Watson is, I think, going to be a potential league MVP. But there is something about his ability to beat you no matter what defense you are presenting him with and no matter what is in his face, that you do have to pull back some of the greatest of all time, of which Elway is, of course, one.
First things first, and we're joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook. Brian, thanks for being
What's
here with
up,
us.
Morning.
Good to
morning.
See you.
CC, welcome back, baby.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
You got some good stuff, thanks to some things that you had talked about earlier, yeah. Which we'll get
Starting
to.
Starting the fire.
Let's talk some Cowboys. Dak Prescott's contract extension has been a focal point of conversations all season. To pay or not to pay, that's the question. But our very own Brian Westbrook was very critical of how Jerry Jones has handled the situation. Brian, you said, quote, you can't put your quarterback in this position. So, Brian, tell us why you feel this way.
Well, you know,
begin with, I'm anti-noise. And I think there's a couple different types of noise in the NFL. There's the media stuff. Seems like Cleveland, you know, they're dealing with good players and they're dealing a lot in the media, talking to the press. There's other type of noise like the Dallas Cowboys. And you're in a situation where it's contracts. Obviously, you had the Zeke situation early on in the season. And now you're dealing with the quarterback. And for me, I remember in 2005, I was going into a contract year. I sat out training camp and I ended up coming in midway towards the end of the training camp. And all season long, I still didn't sign a contract, but all season long, every single game, I'm thinking about how do I earn the money that hopefully I'll get in my contract? How do I, is it 150 yards rushing? Is it 100 yards receiving? How do I earn that? And that has to be what Dak is thinking every single week. Well, listen, I had a great first three games. Should I have earned the contract? What do I need to do to make sure that I can get this money from Jerry Jones and his football team? And so for me, I'm thinking the quarterback is a mental position. Quarterback and kicker. You don't want to put those guys in a situation where they have to be thinking. You just want them to go out there and react. And for Dak, he has to be thinking every single game, you know what? I got to go out there and be the best quarterback I can be so that I can earn this money. I don't want my quarterback thinking about that. I want my quarterback only thinking about how to make this team better and how can we make this team successful. I ended up getting paid in November, and then I stopped thinking about that. It wasn't on my mind anymore. And that's what I think happens for this Dallas football team, that they had to get past this. Obviously, Jerry Jones waited until the middle part of the training camp to pay Zeke. You don't want to put your team in that situation. It's a small window. And so when you have that small window, you want everything to be right. So many things will go wrong throughout the season. It's going to be injuries. It's going to be missed assignments. It's going to be drop balls, all those different things, all the things that they're dealing with now. The last thing that you want to add on top of that is a quarterback situation or a contract situation. I don't want any noise at all in my football team.
Well, I do wonder, however, how much of this Jerry might actually honestly agree with you on, and he's just as shocked as I am that Dak hadn't signed on the dotted line yet. I think Jerry thought this was going to get done. I think Jerry, when he and Steven were talking for the last year about Dak Prescott being their franchise quarterback, about Dak Prescott getting an extension, about Dak Prescott being their guy, even when Dak was struggling, I imagine that he anticipated that Dak was going to sign before the season started. And then what do you do as management? And I almost never take management's side in these things. But what do you do as management if you feel like we have made an offer that would make you one of the, call it, six highest paid quarterbacks in football, that would give you generational guaranteed wealth, and you're fighting us in the margins when we've made it clear this is where our offer is. Now, what Dak could do is continue to play the way he did the first few games, but that hasn't happened, and the contract still isn't signed. So unless it's being reported, and it hasn't been, and I don't think it will be, that the Cowboys have lowered their offer from where it once was, because you can't walk that back. No. Like, that's you can't offer him $32 million and now say, well, after the Jets game, it's $30 million, because then you're going to never get anything done. But I'm not certain what position the Cowboys should take, other than they could have taken the position that some teams do, which is we don't do contracts during the year. That is, you can get it done up until the eve of the first game. And if you don't get it done, then it is tabled until the offseason. They didn't take that path, and that is what has led us to where we are right now.
Absolutely. From the beginning, they did make a mistake. When you approach that first week of the season, when you get to that Wednesday, Thursday practice, you start getting into Friday, the red zone. On that Friday of the season starter, the first game, if you haven't signed the contract, it's time for one of you to make an announcement that we're not going to talk about it during the season. And we have seen this not only in football, but in basketball. When you talk about your impending free agency or a contract, it's a distraction. And you're right. Playing ball, man, is hard enough. It's the hardest thing that I've ever done. The challenges day in and day out to try to be great. People trying to humiliate you. Defense is set up to be able to stop you. And then sometimes the offense is not trying to feature you. Trying to figure out how am I going to get my little bit in this game, because this game plan is not centered around me. So I do agree with you to the point. Jerry's put extra pressure. And I don't know who it was, either you or Jenna pointed out, Dak was playing remarkable with this being in the back of his mind.
Yeah. At the very beginning.
And I think the best point that you make in the comparison, you didn't say it, but when you ain't been paid before, when you wasn't no first round pick, and that's something that I know you were identifying with, because you're talking about, I need that security. I'm in the league with these guys, but I'm in a different NFL. And Jared Goff, first pick in the draft, got that big contract and then got re'd up. You think that didn't hurt Dak's feelings? Because Dak was thinking he was just as good as them when they were coming out of college. And then my man in the field, Wentz.
Carson Wentz.
He gets paid.
He was the second pick, so he had already gotten so Dak's like, million.
Not only, and it ain't no black-white thing, but he's like, man, I don't get no respect. How many playoff games those guys won? How many times they won the division? I feel like I should be going, besides golf going to the Super Bowl on a better team, I should be getting the same type of respect. They disrespected me coming into the league. Now they disrespected me for this contract. So I'm with you, man. In the back of his mind, it's impossible for him to think like he was thinking those first 3 years. It's my job to win the game compared to it's my job to look good.
When I was going through it, I didn't talk to my friends about it. I didn't talk to the guys on the team. I didn't talk to anybody in management about it at all. It was all in my head. And every game I thought about it, after those first three games, Dak had to be thinking like, hey, man, I just balled out. I had a great first three games. Then you see Green Bay only scored 10 points, no touchdown. Then you see, the Saints, 10 points, no touchdown. Green Bay, three interceptions. Then you see against the Jets, couldn't get in the two-point conversion. Now you have to be thinking, we're in a three-game loss. And at that point, you're saying, listen, what do I do next? How can I help this team? Oh, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, how do I get paid? And so with so many different things at that position, football is a stressful job anyway. The quarterback's position is even more stressful. That's why you don't want to play those types of mental games with them.
Just real quick, it would be unnatural for this not to be weighing on Dak heavily.
Absolutely.
For any human being, especially someone young into their career and playing a dangerous, violent sport, that he knows every week in the NFL, we see a guy stretch it off.
Right.
And I mean, usually, hopefully, those guys end up being okay. They don't always. And the point you made, C, that he has not gotten even that first contract. Like, if Carson Wentz, God forbid, something had happened, if when he dove into the end zone against the Rams, he had never come back, he still has.
He's still rich, rich.
Yeah, absolutely. Dak's made less than $5 million in his career. And for a guy, and I understand that's a lot in the regular world, it's nothing in the NFL, and it's nothing amongst his colleagues. This will be the biggest financial moment of his life. How it couldn't affect him mentally somehow, I think would be unrealistic.
I remember when I was up for a contract extension, I remember they drafted Randy Moss. And I remember me telling the general manager, when you get an emergency in the middle of the night, who do you call? And he's like, you, Chris. I said, you guys have a problem in the locker room, who do you call? He's like, you, Chris. I said, no, for all that stuff that I've done, I want to be paid for that. Mm-hmm. And that national anthem, him making them guys stand on that line, and whatever Jerry said, Dak went out there and repeated it, he deserved a contract for that.
That's right.
Because he took a lot of heat for standing up and being a leader. And it's tough being a leader to the Dallas Cowboys. So they need to get this done. I agree with you, B.
Face of the franchise.
Brian, so how can the Chiefs offense get back on track against a tough Broncos defense?
I think the easy answer is just to run the dog on football. But I also know Andy Reid, and I was with him for 8 years, and that's just not in his DNA. He doesn't think that way. The way that Andy Reid thinks is, if I get 5 yards on a rushing attack, which is really good, which is for a run, well, I could have got 22 if I would have thrown the football. And so that's just the way that he thinks. He's like, well, that's negative 17 yards right there. I could have just thrown the football instead of running it.
It seems like he told you that a couple times.
A couple times. And so I lived it in Philadelphia, and so there was games we would get 10, 12 carries. We were averaging 5-6 yards a carry because he wants to throw the football. And so when I look at this team, I'm saying, well, the last two games, you've only rushed the ball for 89 yards. That's in two games. That's embarrassing. And so when you have a football team, the defense can't stop the run. They can't get off the field. They can't stop the pass. You have to find a way to help them. But it starts with Andy Reid. The only way that's going to change is Andy Reid says, we can run the football against this football team, and we're going to try it. We're going to stick with it. LeSean McCoy is healthy enough. He's ready to carry the load. Allow this guy to eat a little bit. Allow him to get those carries. And it'll help your team in so many ways. You have a compromised offensive line with two injured players. You have a compromised quarterback with an injury to the ankle. Run the football. Allow that to lead your team. And it also is going to help your defense at the same time. You're kind of killing two birds with one stone.
So last year we heard the Chiefs, to protect their defense, the Chiefs, to protect time of possession, should run the ball more. And I pushed back against it.
I think I told you that.
You did tell me that. And even today, to this day,
in regards to last year's team, I don't know that I agree with you for this one reason. Last year's offense was one of the greatest offenses in NFL history. And I think you can make the argument, I understand the counterpoint, but the argument that they should have done exactly what they did offensively because they were scoring 30 points almost every night, every week. That's not the case right now, though. Right now, what they're doing offensively the last 2 weeks has led to the two lowest scoring games of the Patrick Mahomes era. It has led to two losses, two home losses, two games where Patrick Mahomes got his ankle stepped on again, where they have averaged, 21 or 22 minutes time of possession. So with new information, you can have new opinions. And the new information right now is what the Chiefs are doing offensively is not working for their offense or their defense. Partially because of offensive line injuries, wide receiver injuries, quarterback injuries, maybe because there is a bit of a more of a book out on Patrick Mahomes, even though I'm skeptical of that part of it. This week against this defense on a short week, this pass rush with that offensive line, both the guys on your left side out, I agree with you 1,000%. And if Andy does want to throw the ball as much as he often does, then do it quickly and do it through the screen game, a place where you were deadly, where if you have a pass rush, you can use it against them, let them get upfield, and then go kill them with the screen game.
After sitting here listening to you guys, and Nick, I know you love Kansas City, and besides that, I know you really appreciate Andy Reid. You're Andy Reid disciple. You write off the Andy Reid tree. My question is Andy Reid part of the problem? Because if you're saying through the years Andy's not going to run the ball, and you're saying, oh, even last year's team running the ball, I've been on a team like Andy Reid's. And every single season, I went home disappointed. So ultimately, would I change? If I could look back on my career, would I change? Would I give up a couple hundred receptions and everything? Well, maybe 50
or so. I was going to say, you would give up a couple hundred.
But ultimately,
to win some games, you would.
We didn't lose because we couldn't run the ball. Ultimately, our defense and our quarterback wasn't consistent enough in those big games. Now, I don't think Kansas City's going to have that problem, but if you negate the running, especially in a game like Thursday night, if you look at every stat that Denver, fourth in defense, okay, where are they out of the top 10? That's against the rush.
Yep.
All right, so Andy Reid, even in a matchup like this, you got wholesale changes on the offensive line. One of your star receivers is out. If we watch Andy Reid tonight, and come out of this game and wonder why he didn't run the ball against a top-rated defense, we should come on this show and be like, is Andy Reid one of the damn problems in Kansas City? Because ultimately, Bill Belichick, he doesn't coach just a 34 anymore. He coaches a 43. Bill Belichick used to choke out the offense, didn't want to throw the ball. Him and Nick Saban. It's amazing how both of those have evolved. Yep. Alabama throwing the ball 40 times with Nick Saban. We know Belichick would throw the ball 50 times in a game if that's what's the best way to go against that defense, guys.
I love the idea about running the football. I love the idea about getting LeSean McCoy involved in some space in the screen game. This is why you have to do this. This defense over the last two games has been on the field for 77 minutes.
Oh,
that's way too long.
I didn't even say that yet, Nick.
But that's a long time for any defense to be on the field. And on top of that, they're not very good. And so at this point, he has to figure something out. Andy Reid, hopefully he's part of the solution. I don't want to say he's part of the problem.
Okay, I'm just telling you tomorrow, after they don't run the ball again tonight, tomorrow that will be in the block.
Well, tonight, if that doesn't happen, LeSean McCoy needs to be knocking on that door like, hey, don't forget about me because I still can get it done for this offense.
What did Magic say? I ain't going to be here. If they lose tonight, I ain't going to be here.
Let's talk. Super Bowl 54 on Fox. According to Fox Bet, the Saints are the favorites to represent the NFC at +320 with the Packers right behind them at +550. So see who is the best team in the NFC.
I would say right now, what the Saints have accomplished with their defense. I know we don't talk a lot of special teams, but man, they got very good returners, very explosive. Dependable kickers. Their coverage teams are very, very good. But why is that important? Well, we're talking about the best team. And then Green Bay, I know Green Bay's got a good defense. Devontae Adams, how healthy is he going to be with a turf toe injury that's already caused him to miss a couple games? Because they're a different offense without him, which means they are a different team without him. Even though if they get home field advantage, you can go to Lambeau Field and put your physical presence on them because they're not going to run the football. So for me, I would have to go with Drew Brees being out of the Saints, what we saw with them with Teddy Bridgewater, because that we do know, that Drew Brees will come back. And now because of the winning streak, they're able to be extra patient with him and this team. When Drew Brees got hurt in the game, they stayed on the West Coast because they had two games on the West Coast. They had a team meeting that Teddy Bridgewater was one of the speakers. Michael Thomas was one of the speakers. And Teddy Bridgewater said, I'm not Drew Brees. I want you guys to know that. But right now, I'm so happy to be back in the lineup. I'm going to give you guys everything. I never thought. He said, when I was riding in the ambulance, when I had that horrific incident in Minnesota, I didn't think I'd ever play again. They told me I might not walk again. But I'm going to tell you guys, I'm committed to this team to play my absolute best. And that galvanized that team, that dinner meeting that they had. And you could see week by week, and even last week, just enough plays for them to win, be able to win, Nick. That right there, our respect for Sean Payton. I would have to give the edge to the Saints, what they've been able to overcome, Nick.
Listen, the odds have the Saints and the Packers as the top two. Chris said the Saints. I'm going to say the Packers. But first, let me say one thing about the only undefeated team in the NFC, the 49ers. And that's this. The statistical profile says this should be an easy answer, and it should be San Francisco. They're third in the NFL in points scored and second in points allowed. They are undefeated. They are healthier than these other teams. All of them. So why are neither one of us advocating for the 49ers, even though C's been higher on them this year than I've been,
yep.
But I'm coming around. And it is because when we are talking about, we just showed a Utah highlight. I'm going to do a cross-sport analogy. I think Utah might end up with the best record in the NBA this year. I do not think they can win the championship. You know why? Because I don't trust their best guy. And in the NBA, the best guy version of that in the NFL is, how much do you trust the quarterback? And for San Francisco, the reason it's tough to put them in this conversation is because the quarterback that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to have to look eye to eye with are Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. And so that's why San Francisco, I don't want people think they were forgotten,
no.
But I'm not ready to elevate them to that level
yet. I need to see
yet.
A little bit more for them. I'm worried about their wide receiver, George Kittle, second best tight end, but they don't have enough explosive players. But if they have one of those all-time defenses,
correct.
They don't have to be that explosive. So I need to be able to see that. Over the next five games, I think I'll be able to make that determination. But they're right there behind Green Bay.
Absolutely.
I would give the Saints and their resume of what they've accomplished as a franchise the last two seasons, I have to put that in there. I'm not just looking on this season.
And the reason why the Saints and the Packers, to me, have separated themselves is they have shown you they can beat you in a multitude of ways in a way these two teams did not show you in the past. I mentioned the stat earlier, but I think it warrants mentioning again. Since Drew Brees became a New Orleans Saint in 2006, up until the beginning of this season, 18 times, only 18 times, they were held under 14 points. They were 1-17 in those 18 games. Since Drew Brees has been out of the lineup, they've been held under 14 points three times. They're 2-1. Now, that does speak to how important Drew Brees is to their offense, but also speaks to how they can beat you different ways and how good the defense is. The reason I'm going with Green Bay is I don't think Green Bay has played anything close to its best football. Its offense right now is still middle of the pack. Aaron Rodgers is showing you flashes, but he's also showing you hitting receivers in the face mask, and those receivers, because they're probably practice squad guys, if there is full receiving corps healthy, having that ball pop up and turn into an interception. The Packers also, the quality of their competition thus far this year is as high as anyone has faced in football. They have beaten Chicago, a legit Super Bowl contender. Minnesota, a legit division, if not Super Bowl contender. Dallas, a team that was at one point a legit contender. And Detroit, a team. Detroit's lost two games this year to the Chiefs, who they had on the ropes, to the Packers, who they've had on the ropes. So Detroit's a good football team. I think when Rodgers gets Davante Adams back, the fact that they are thus far been able to survive these two games without him against two quality opponents in Dallas and Detroit, it could end up being good for them. And I say that because these other receivers that he doesn't trust, he's being forced to develop some type of rapport with them. He's being forced to find someone. It might have been the Lazard kid who caught the big play. To where when Davante Adams comes back, do they have another legitimate outside option, which they'd been searching for? To me, it's very, very close, but I would give the edge to Green Bay.
Is there anyone that's somewhere close? Do you have a dark horse, despite the fact these teams have separated themselves?
I would say still be careful for Philadelphia. because they're talented, they got playoff experience, and they're one of the few teams that you know can go on the road, just like they did a couple of Thursday nights ago, and smack Green Bay. They can go to San Francisco, smack them. They can go to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Alshon, if he catch the ball, they're going to beat New Orleans potentially last year. So I would say the sleeper would still be a Philadelphia team.
And I would say Seattle is an A.J. Green trade away from joining this conversation. Seattle needs one more playmaker. What do you mean? Seattle, they got the league MVP.
Somebody's not going to trade AJ.
Okay, well then, all right, just another receiver. Pick a receiver. I don't know. Who are we trading?
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Welcome back to First Things First. The Panthers are coming off a 37-26 win over the Bucks Sunday in London. They've won four straight games, thanks in large part to Greg Olsen, and the three-time Pro Bowler and Panthers tight end here with us now. Greg, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate you getting
me
up early.
Thank you.
And coming
appreciate
in.
Nick keeping me in his top three there. That was I was getting a little nervous off camera. I wasn't sure if I was going to make it or not.
I didn't even know you were saying that.
Yeah, of course. Some poor tight end got kicked out of that three.
Let me put you back in that situation with Jason Witten. They're in zero coverage. What do you have to run as a tight end?
When we get down there, I love when they give me what we call choice routes. I can go in, I can go off leverage. He's inside leverage. I can run at him, run to the back pylon. He's outside leverage. I can run at his outside shoulder, cross face right in front of the quarterback. Like you said, give him some options, give him some space. Zero coverage, Greg Williams, that's his hallmark, right? You got to expect that down there. And they came up short.
Sorry, did we go ahead?
I like it. Well, because you're leading me into the question. I mean, his 13th season in the NFL. We can already tell your NFL and football IQ on the field, which is probably a big reason why. But the longevity of your career, how do you continue performing at the level that we see here from you this season?
I've gotten a lot smarter. I wish I knew when I was a rookie and running and didn't have to warm up or stretch or do anything. I wish I knew then what I know now, first and foremost. But I still enjoy the offseason. You know, a lot of older guys don't go around OTAs anymore. They don't do mini camp. They don't do training camp. I still enjoy practicing. I still get my reps in the offseason in the spring. I do a full slate of training camp outside of a couple vet days here and there. Practice, as long as I'm healthy, practice all week during the season. I enjoy the preparation
practice
aspect
is important,
of
Nick.
Yeah, I enjoy that aspect of the game. And I think when I stop enjoying going in March and April and doing the stuff behind the scenes, when I'm tired of doing that, then it's probably time for me to hang him up.
Chris gives me a hard time. He says the Panthers are my NFC team. He gave me his Sam Mills, the late great Sam Mills, yes, helmet in my office. I've watched, I think, every game you've played with Carolina. And when Sarah mentioned your 13th season, there was a time where I wondered if you were going to walk away, because it seemed like you had the worst injury luck. Is you have a foot injury and then you're playing really well and it gets re-aggravated. Mm-hmm. I'm curious for you mentally, did you ever consider, you know what, I've made Pro Bowls, been to a Super Bowl, done great things, and how frustrating it was for you to deal with that repeatedly over a few years as you were?
Yeah, I think what was so hard about it was I went so long with no problems, you know, relatively so, you know, no problems. Never missed a game for 10 seasons. Yep. And then in 2017, second game of the season, break your foot. And then from that point on, it was like I fell off a cliff. You know, I went, had surgery, came back at the end of the season, was able to play fairly well. We made the playoffs, lost to New Orleans. Came back the next year, first game of the season, first quarter against Dallas, just running a routine route, break it again. was a, you know, came back, tried to battle through that, then got plantar fasciitis, ruptured my plantar. So like my right foot was just a complete, it was a struggle there for a while. But I did. I considered, what, is this enough? Is this kind of the writing on the wall that my career is over? I've had a great run. I've achieved a lot of things personally and collectively as a team. But once I kind of stopped feeling sorry for myself and that wore off in the offseason, I was like, I got a lot still left that I want to do. I know I can play at a high level if I can just keep my foot intact. And so far this year, that's what's happened.
Another guy going through the same struggle. Guy's been very, very successful. Former MVP, former Heisman Trophy. That's Cam Newton. Rumored is he's going to come back after the bye week and start practicing. But when you go from being with one of the best quarterbacks in the game to a very inexperienced quarterback, let our audience know some of the things that you have to adjust to for that young player to be successful, things that you do to help him out game in, because he's been successful, and typically young quarterbacks aren't successful in this league.
Yeah, and I've been on the record a million times over the years that Cam is probably one of, if not the best thing that ever happened to my career. You know, coming from Chicago to Carolina and playing with him the last 8-9 years has, you know, elevated my game, mm-hmm. and my, you know, what I've been able to achieve is a big part due to him. The fortunate part about playing so long together and having so many practice reps and game reps is Cam and I kind of learned to think alike. I knew how he saw the field. He understood what I would do on certain routes. Now you enter a young guy like Kyle, there's so much more conversation. You can only get so many reps during the week. You can only do so many on-field reps. But there's a lot of clips that, you know, he jokes every week. Cam and I bring up clips of things we've done in the past. He's yes. like, you guys have tape for every situation. I said, well, that we're fortunate that we had that, but now I want you to be able to see some of these things that have happened mm-hmm. when you weren't around, because we want to make sure we're ready, because we might only get one crack at it on Sunday, and we got to make sure we do the work on the front end, so if it does show itself, we take advantage of it. Not, hey, next time. There might not be a next time, and I think with a young quarterback like Kyle, it's on some of the older guys to just have that open communication and dialogue to get to learn what he sees, what's he comfortable with, because not all quarterbacks are the same, regardless of their experience level. They all see things and process things a little different.
Well, and it's interesting, because I was part of the Fox broadcast in that Arizona Cardinals game, and the first thing Kyle Allen said, he said, Greg has been my security blanket. He said he sat down with me extra hours watching so much film. What's your anticipation for when Cam does get healthy and comes back the way that Kyle Allen's playing, the decision that the team needs to make of what they're going to do with that position?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we all understand that's the elephant in the room, right? That's the kind of the weird situation that we're in, is we have a MVP caliber quarterback who just hasn't been healthy, and it kills you to see him. He walks around every day. He's at the facility, and you can just see, I can only imagine, I've been there, where you mm-hmm. just aren't right. So I have a ton of sympathy. I totally understand where he is and that feeling of not being out there with your guys when he's a guy that's not used to missing much time either. And but again, now Kyle's doing a great job. I think that decision will be made once Cam is back, once he's at practice and he feels like himself, because at the end of the day, we want Cam. Mm-hmm. We don't want just Cam battling through 100 things. We want Cam healthy on the field so he can play. He's different than everybody else. He's going to run. He's going to try to run a linebacker over. He's going to try to get himself going. He thrives off that. And when he couldn't do that, he wasn't himself. And I think the biggest thing that he understood and the team understood was, let's take a step back, get healthy, get myself put back together where I can go out and play to the level that people have seen me play for 8 years now. And think once we get to that point, then the decision will be made.
And credit to Kyle Allen for playing well during this stretch. You guys are undefeated, and I think people, if they're watching from afar, they say, oh, they lost 9 straight, including last year with Cam, won 5 straight with Kyle Allen. If you're watching closely, Kyle has played well. But the other things that's happened is that defense, led by, yep. at least partially led by Gerald McCoy, Luke's probably always the leader, has been outstanding. And if a running back is going to win a league MVP again, it might be the guy you guys have.
Yep.
Christian McCaffrey, when you guys drafted him his rookie year, it felt like they were almost trying too hard to get him the ball, like repeatedly. Now, you can't get him the ball enough. Tell us about his progression and what is special about him as a player.
Yeah, so when he was a rookie, we had Jonathan Stewart, who was kind of our bell cow for a long time, took us to to the Super Bowl a year or two before. He was kind of our workhorse type back. And then Christian was seen as like the change of pace type guy. And what was hard was in that kind of situation with a guy like Christian, he's a volume guy. And that's what's rare about him versus some of these other real dynamic athletic guys is, you know, they play 50, 60% of the snaps. Christian's going to play 99% of the snaps because at the more volume he gets, the better he is. And I think that's what separates him from maybe some of the other guys. And as a rookie, if he was in the game, it was to get the ball. Well, that, if I'm a defense, that's really easy to scheme for, and that's really able to defend. As we kind of evolved the last 2 years now where he's just on the field at all times, he is a nightmare. I can only imagine what these coordinators must do, because he's not just a great runner who you can throw the ball to. He is an equally dynamic receiver as he is a runner, which maybe Kamara, maybe there's one or two guys in the league like that, but most guys are runners first. We'll throw him a screen, we'll throw him a check, we'll throw him a, you know, and let him run after. Christian's out there running bang eights, he's running posts, he's running options out of the backfield. He's just a rare, unique guy, and then you add the volume he's able to absorb. I mean, if any running back's ever going to dethrone the quarterback movement that we're we're going against in the NFL, I mean, he's got to be at the top of the list, right?
You're a workout warrior. You take care of your body. You're a phenomenal athlete. Always have been. High school, elite athlete, college, University of Miami. Went to Chicago. Been successful there in Carolina. Make a list for me. I want you to make a list of the five most athletic teammates that you had. Those Miami days, all right, with all those players.
All right.
And you just talked about a couple that you played with recently in Carolina. Your list of the top five guys that you've played with. Best athletes.
Number one, Sean Taylor. I mean, obviously tragic situation with what happened to him and losing his life so early, especially in his career, his life.
Sean Taylor was the leading rusher in the state of Florida as a tailback.
I'll tell you a little story. When I got to Miami as a freshman, I was a redshirt. My first time ever breaking the huddle as a scout team tight end, break the huddle, turn around. 9 first-round draft picks of the 11 starters on that first-team defense. This was 2003. Sean Taylor was one of those. I'll never forget. I went back to my dorm and I said, Dad, this was not what it was in New Jersey.
You called Dad?
I grew up in New Jersey. I said, Dad. Hey, he said, how's everything going? I said, oh, it's great. It's beautiful. It's sunny. I said, these guys are really good. I don't know if I'm ever going to play here, but it's going to be fun. And Sean Taylor has to be probably at the top of that list. He was 6'3", 6'4", 235 pounds, could return punts, could be gunner. He was unbelievable. Devin Hester. Both a college and professional
Chicago.
Teammate
played
of
with
mine.
Him in Chicago.
Yep. So he's a guy that jumps off at me. You got to throw Christian in there. He's just a rare. I think people don't give him enough credit for just how athletic he is.
And most of that's because he's white. That's it.
Thank you.
Same white guys can't say it. No, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not on that list.
Yeah.
But that's the 100% part of it.
No, white guys can't say that. Black guys can say that.
He's a unique, special guy. That's amazing. So those three guys jump off the list. You know who's an unbelievable athlete is a guy like Eric Reed, a teammate of mine now. You see those videos of him box jumping?
Yeah. Yes.
The guy's box jumping like 65 inches and like stupid stuff. And we had 2 games come down to Hail Mary attempts from the, you know, on defense.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
And he jumped against Jacksonville. If you go back and look at that clip, he's 3 feet higher. I mean, there's some other good athletes on the field too. Mm-hmm. He's an unbelievable, unique athlete currently that I'm playing with.
We'll let you off the hook.
God, I mean, when you go to Miami, Cam, I mean, he's the single greatest athlete to play his position of all time.
Yeah.
You know, he's 255 pounds. You know.
Greg, you're talking about workhorses. Your team is on a bye week, but you're still working. You're here, you're calling the Arizona Cardinals at New York Giants game. What has this week been like for you prepping? How do you get yourself ready to be in a different circumstance when you're normally on the field and you're going to be up in the booth?
You know, it's a couple years ago I did this during the season, but I was on the IR from one of my foot issues. So I had a lot more time on my hands. This year, obviously playing, thankfully, coming back from London. So I didn't really get to start prepping for the Giants. I knew a little bit about Arizona because we had played them. So that was an advantage there until really Monday afternoon. We came in on Monday. We didn't get home till late. And so it's been a busy week. And now to travel up here, obviously get to spend some time up here in New York with you guys, brought our family, going to enjoy a little bit of that. And then, you know, get ready to call the game. And And for you guys know, it's not easy. I think people think it's a lot easier than it is, but it's a great opportunity. I'm thankful for Fox to have me in for the second time to call a live game as a current player, and hopefully it's a good game.
You joked earlier that when I was listing my three tight ends, I threw you in. I would have had you in no matter what. However, I would have had to expand it to four if Gronk hadn't retired. Yep. Gronk's retired. We don't know exactly how permanently retired he is. As a guy that's played the position, actually has been in the league longer than Gronk was in the league, how difficult would it be for him to step into the fold in November after missing the offseason, missing the first half of a year?
Yeah, I think people just assume you just pick up where you left off. And he is an unbelievable player. He's a Hall of Famer, one of the all-time best to play the position. There's no taking that away. I think to just up and pick it up and leave, and then all of a sudden, 10, 12 weeks later, just come back, and you've done nothing. You've worked out on your own. Obviously, he's in great shape. He's a rare guy as far as that goes. But football's different.
It just is.
Show up and ask a guy who misses 3 weeks with an ankle sprain how that first practice is, how that first game coming back off the IR designated to return. He only missed a couple months. He's been gone now almost a year. I think he'd have an uphill battle. I'm not saying he couldn't do it. I think they could spot use him, red zone, third down, specific targets. Do I think he was capable of coming back and taking his entire load that he had prior to retirement? I would have to bet against it, but I guess with that situation up in New England, you never know.
Yeah, Greg, you're here with us. You're here to call Cardinals Giants on Sunday. You're also here with Smartwater. Tell us a little bit about that in your relationship.
Yeah, we have a busy bye week. So when I get done calling the game on Sunday, we're going to fly home. And then on Monday, my wife and I are very involved in the community back in Charlotte with our son and his treatment at our children's hospital. We've started a nonprofit that supports pediatric cardiac patients at the hospital back in Charlotte. And one of our big partners is Smartwater Alkaline. And we're doing our first annual Fit Fest. We're using the new indoor practice bubble that the Panthers bought. Dave Tepper bought it. We all use it. And we're going to have a Fit Fest. We have a bunch of instructors come. We've got 500-600 people. And, you know, Smartwater is going to be there with us to help, you know, keep everybody going, keep them hydrated. And they've been a great partner for us back in Charlotte with all of our foundation efforts. And we're excited to have that on Monday.
Yeah, that's God awesome. Bless you and your wife
Thank
and all
you.
The things yeah. you guys do. Tremendous effort off the field. We got great stories around the NFL. They don't get enough notoriety. This is truly one of the great men that we have playing
I appreciate
game.
It. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks
so much.
Here, Greg, so much for being here with us this morning.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.